The Big Story is brought to you by Scotia iTrade. There's a trader in all of us. If you're anything like me, this has felt like a long year. You want proof? This was January 2nd, 2018.
Now the president is tweeting about how his nuclear button is much bigger and more powerful than Kim Jong-un's.
We have two maniacs with nuclear warheads bragging about who has the bigger button.
And since that fateful "my button is bigger than yours" tweet, North Korea and America agreed to a meeting, had a meeting, struck some sort of deal, and...
denuking, I mean, he's denuking the whole place, and he's going to start very quickly. I think he's going to start now.
Since that interview, the relationship has yet again fallen apart. North Korea is pursuing nuclearization again, if they ever stopped, and we are likely to end 2018 right where we began it, with a handful more gray hairs. All that to say, it has been a year. An important year, but a long year. So long that at the start of it, this podcast was negative 6 months old. And it would be impossible for us to try to recap 2018, and frankly, it would also be really depressing for you and for us. So instead, we invited three of our favorite guests, you will recognize them all, to join us in identifying the most important narratives of the year. And then, because we simply can't close out our year in review like that, we also made them give us some good news and some actual pieces of advice for handling the ceaseless grind that is trying to keep up with what's going on in the world. If you are a regular listener to this podcast, you'll recognize that as our ethos, and you will no doubt be shocked to know that all three of those tips involve managing your social media. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is Aaron Hutchins.
It's been a long year.
Stacey Lee Kong.
I don't know if you remember, but there was an Olympics this year.
And Donovan Bennett.
And I'm like, did that happen in 2017 or 2018?
And these are the most important stories of 2018. Aaron Hutchins, staff writer at Maclean's, frequent guest on the Big Story podcast. Aaron, what is the most important story of 2018?
There really was no shortage of like massive things that happened in Canada this year. The one that I think is probably the biggest story, and happened to be one that I covered as well, is the Humboldt Broncos bus crash.
Right.
I guess to give some sort of brief recap, the team had a playoff game. They were driving up to Nipawin, which is a not a short drive, but by Saskatchewan standards, as you know, it's a short drive north from Humboldt. And they were crossing an intersection when they were hit by a truck. And there was a bus crash, and 16 people died that day, including the bus driver, dozen players, trainer, coaches. It was just an absolutely dreadful, dreadful day.
That was one of those stories, too, where the news starts to trickle out and you get a real feeling that this is going to be awful.
That was exactly it. I remember I heard about it the night it happened, and it kind of hit all the parts of being Canadian, I suppose. It was kids, which is never easy. It was a hockey team, which is something obviously it's iconically Canadian. Mm-hmm. But even if you're not a hockey player, like I was a soccer player myself growing up, and I've been on that bus. Everyone's been on that bus.
Yeah.
If you are going on trips with friends or going to watch a sporting event or whatnot, everyone has been on that bus. There was just so much outpouring of grief and support that really was, at least being in Humboldt, it was obviously quite sad, but also just seeing the support from the community itself, from Canada. There was the GoFundMe page that I can't remember how much money it got, but it was in the millions. It got so much money, and how much that meant to parents.
And the sticks.
And the sticks being left out.
The sticks will be one of the images of the year.
Yeah. And that really was, there was all this warmth that was, and love being sent to this city for this team. Because really, this is a city where like the Humboldt Broncos are, kind of, that's the next sports team in town. That's what everyone knows. The boys had their hair dyed blonde because it was the playoffs. So it was really, it really hit the community hard. I will say that there was at least a really nice moment at the end of this, if there is a nice moment, is when the Broncos brought back their hockey team.
Yeah.
And it was nationally televised. And it was this moment of, even though only two of the players in the crash were back on the ice for that team, for that game, partly reasons because, you know, people were injured, others were just too old to play in the league anymore. But it was this really nice moment of a really good step forward for Humboldt and for the team to really get a team back on the ice and symbolically say, like, we're, you know, this town will always be remembered for this.
Yeah.
In some degree, But it was this nice motive scene. Like, here's a hockey team that is back on the ice and back playing again. And I looked at the standings the other week, and they're actually doing pretty well. So that was good to see.
Now you have to give us a good news story from 2018, because a lot of these discussions that we have with our guests are, look, 2018 was not a great year.
It was rough.
It was rough. Yeah. But we have to try to pull out some good things. Otherwise, what do we do this for?
Yeah. My favorite good news story of the year is, this is honestly the silliest story ever. It's a story of one man lying about being born in Flin Flon.
Oh, yeah. Okay, explain that briefly, because this is a wacky story.
This is, there's this well-known Canadian author named Bill Gaston, who's been, you know, nominated for all the big awards, Governor General. There were all these articles about him over the years that I would say the Flin Flon-born author or the Flin Flon native. And the Flin Flon Reminder, which is the best newspaper name in Canada, saw a recent story. He had a book that came out earlier this year, and it said the Flin Flon, you know, native author. And they just called them up and said, oh, let's do a story on Flin Flon boy does well.
Right, hometown kid makes good.
At that point, he just came clean in this small article. He said, listen, man, I'm sorry. This is going to sound really weird, but I actually wasn't born in Flin Flon. I just made that up.
It sounds good.
It sounds great. And
if you had to pick a place in Canada to be born as an author of Canadiana.
Yeah, he said, I'm born in America. I'm actually born in Washington. And he says, I wish I was from Flin Flon. I have never been to Flin Flon, but I love Flin Flon.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to look into this story a bit more. I said, how does someone lie for decades about being born in Flin Flon? You know, I called him up and we talked, and he said, you know, this is the story. I was born in Tacoma, Washington, moved to Canada at a very young age and didn't think much about it. Started to emerge on the literary scene, so to speak. Eventually, someone from a Canadian literary magazine or publication asked where I was born, and I was embarrassed to say America because I didn't know what it would do to my career. So I lied and I said Flin Flon. It was so stupid and so silly. And then this one guy in Flin Flon saw this article and reminder and said, well, gosh darn it, if this man wants to be from Flin Flon, then he should be from Flin Flon. And he went to city council, and the mayor had said, hey, can we make this guy an honorary citizen? And they approved it. They said, yeah, let's do this. How are we going to get him his quote-unquote official Flin Flon residency papers? And the guy took his van and drove it across Canada to deliver it to him in person.
See, that's the kind of happy ending this year needs more of. This is the professional advice portion.
Okay.
What's one thing that you did this year in your consumption of the news to sort of turn off the fire hose or to manage the endless news cycle? Because you have to pay attention to this stuff, but it also can be a lot.
It is a lot. I found myself in a new routine that I really enjoy on how to consume news. Now, it's still a lot for the average person. I don't expect the average person to read or consume as much as I do. But I read the newspaper first thing in the morning, an actual like physical newspaper that is dropped off every day at my doorstep. I do that every morning.
Pay for the news.
I pay for the news. Toronto Star. Globe and Mail is great too, but I pay for the Toronto Star.
Get those plugs in.
Yeah. It's delivered to my door every morning. I read that on the way to work. On my commute, I listen to a podcast.
Usually you hear yourself on that podcast.
Yeah. I read magazines when I get home. And then at night, I read a book, fiction, nonfiction. I read a physical book. And what I've discovered is I am so much happier when I stay off social media.
Yeah.
So I do use Twitter very limitedly, only in my capacity of trying to find people or if I'm trying to find stuff for a story. Facebook as well. I have deleted those apps from my phone just because I don't need them on 24 hours a day. And the cycle of newspaper, podcast, magazine, book just allows me to at least stay well-rounded, because I find if you're trying to consume too much media, you don't read books. And books are really nice.
Depth.
Yeah.
Depth is the key. Thanks, Aaron.
No problem.
Stacey Lee Kong is a writer and editor at Flair.com, one of our favorite people to talk to.
Thanks, Jordan.
What is the most important story of 2018? I just put you right on the spot right away.
That's fine. No press. I think it's Me Too. And I think it's the way that we've been talking about Me Too and how that has evolved. And I know this feels like a really long year. I don't know
Me Too started in 2017.
It did, but
how did it change this year?
Well, I think a big part of it was the Aziz Ansari story. So that happened in January, which I know feels like, I know that feels like it probably happened 7 or 10 years ago, but it really only happened in January.
This is a theme that 2018 was really long.
Real, real long. Like, I don't know if you remember, but there was an Olympics this year. I was shocked. Shocked.
There was an Olympics this year. Yeah.
Anyways, back to
Aziz.
So that story was really interesting because it was this other example of kind of broken consent. So it wasn't the way that we've been talking about Me Too all along, which was often, if not violence, then at least a really specific problematic example of behavior.
Right.
And instead, what we were talking about, a lot of people were conflicted about because it was like, oh, well, isn't this just a bad date?
I feel like we said gray area a lot this year.
Oh, my God, so much. And slippery slope, we said a lot, too.
Yep.
We should not say that anymore. I don't like those words. But it was a gray area. It wasn't a clear-cut example of assault or harassment.
Mm-hmm.
But what I hoped would happen was that that would open up the conversation to the different ways that consent matters and we engage with it. Because, I mean, that was a deeply familiar experience, I think, for a lot of women.
Right.
Where, yeah, he didn't physically harm her, but it also wasn't a good experience.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, though, I don't think the conversation really went that way. I think it was so nuanced and so complicated, and maybe we just weren't ready to talk about something that was so much gray that we kind of dabbled in it and it made people feel really conflicted. And then we moved on to other more clear-cut examples.
There was a lot of focus at the time, and again, it does feel like a long time ago. There was a lot of focus on the piece itself and how it was written rather than necessarily the content of it.
Yeah, because it was bad.
Right.
It was bad journalism. And that's another angle where, you know, as a journalist, I really feel this responsibility to tell these stories in the right way, and not just so that we don't get sued. I'm really not interested in that part, but also because it undermines the entire conversation when we don't. And so, you know, Aziz Ansari did not have enough time to respond. And the story felt really salacious instead of a clear cut, like, this is what happened. And, you know, Flair is a very voicey publication. I do a lot of work for them, and I really love that. But we also thought a lot about, you know, where does your voice matter? And when should you just be straightforward? Because you don't want to do more damage in, like, yeah, I always want kind of a sassy something, a turn of phrase or whatever, but I don't want to damage the integrity of my brand. And now I feel like babe.net is kind of a joke.
Did it damage the integrity of the Me Too? Feels weird to refer to it as a brand, but...
But I think it did have an impact. I don't think that it was, you know, it didn't end Me Too, obviously. This is still something that is, the movement continues and the conversations continue. But I felt like it did a disservice to Grace, which is the pseudonym of the young woman who had this experience, and also the movement in general, because even a lot of people who would identify as feminists, people who maybe don't identify as feminists but have these kind of values about equality, even they were made uncomfortable by it. And I think you're right. It wasn't actually about, I mean, it wasn't just about Aziz Ansari and his actions. It was also the way the story was told.
And if that was kind of how we started the dialogue this year, where does Me Too go in 2019?
You know, I hope that we go back to that potential for having a nuanced conversation about all the ways that you need to think about consent. And we actually do that in 2019. And here's my Aziz peg again. You know, he hasn't seen the backlash to his comeback, which we've talked about. He hasn't seen that backlash that other people have seen.
Right.
He's got, you know, he had sold out shows recently. He is headlining a tour next year. He's got some, like, he's back. He has made his comeback.
Yeah.
And I don't think that that's a bad thing. I'm not sure that he's not allowed to come back. That's not what I'm trying to say. But I feel like maybe that will prompt some conversations about this type of behavior. And if this is the segue, then, like, I'm sorry, Aziz, that you have to hear about this again. But you kind of do, because I want to talk about that. I want to make sure that it's not just, we've evolved beyond the idea of rape being like a stranger danger thing. I want to make sure that we evolve Me Too so that we're talking about on dates.
Coercion.
Like something that is, you know, hard to identify. And sometimes you just know that it feels wrong. It doesn't look or sound wrong, but it's still wrong. And that's what I hope happens.
Okay, so what is a good news story from 2018? I have to ask you this.
This is the hardest question
you've had all year. I mean,
the hardest question.
Yeah.
A, it's been a very long year. And B, so many bad things happened.
I know. That's why we have to ask this question specifically.
Okay, so
because we are not going out of 2018 only doing horrible things.
Okay, fair. So I will say one of my favorite things to work on this year was this package that Flair does every year called How I Made It. And How I Made It is a really cool just celebration of young women who have had success in their careers. And to me, the coolest thing about it is not just that it's like, you know, I'm 25 and I'm in the corner office. It's all of these varied examples of what success could look like.
Yeah.
So this year we've had Domi. She is an animator. She's the first woman of color to do a Pixar short. She had this really like emotionally grabbing short called Bow. And she was so cool. And it was so cool to talk to her. And we also had a non-binary activist who was the first person in BC to get a non-binary birth certificate, I believe. And they were awesome. And it was just like so refreshing to talk to women and non-binary folks who are doing cool things. And it was like there was no complication. There's no downside. It's not like you have to
be reminded there's still progress being made.
Yes, there's progress being made. And also just to like talk to people who are happy about what they're doing and to be happy for them was so lovely.
What is one thing you did this year to help you manage the endless crush of the news cycle? This is something we talked about on a few episodes this year, and everybody grapples with it. So give me an example of something you did that other people might do.
I don't go on Twitter a lot on the weekends.
Mm.
So I actually didn't think about that until this moment because it happened kind of naturally. I feel like this year, in my work in specific, has been very driven by what's happening in the news cycle. And so
you have to be on social media.
Have to be on social media. And not just Twitter, but also Instagram. And also, you know, what are people talking about on Facebook? Because you still kind of got to know. And I began to feel at some point, I can't tell you exactly when, that it was just too much. And so I started putting my phone down. And as it turns out, things happen so quickly that I miss things even if I am on Twitter. So I think that helped me come to terms with the fact that I will probably miss things on Saturday and Sunday. And it's okay because we can talk about it on Monday. But like for now, maybe I'll just go outside.
Social media getting crushed on these tips.
Because it's the worst. You know, I really like so many things about Twitter. I like the conversations that could happen. I like when I see someone make a really smart joke. You know, I like Instagram. I like memes. I like cat videos. I like all those things.
But at what price?
Exactly. And the price is too high. So no social media on weekends. Sometimes Instagram, but usually not.
Thanks, Stacey.
Thanks for having me.
Have a great 2019. After the break, you know him, you love him, Donovan Bennett from Sportsnet.ca. There's a trader in all of us. Direct invest with Scotia iTrade. Become a new client and you could get up to $1,500 cash or 300 free trades when you open and fund a new account. Conditions apply. See ScotiaiTrade.com for details. Donovan, your last up. What is the most important story of 2018?
Oh my goodness. Well, when you throw in most important, I feel like there's a lot of pressure. Like I'm going to be judged based on what I say. But I think the most interesting, I'll say, story to me, and it's a bunch of stories, the most interesting narrative, is I think 2018 is really the year where the outrage mob decided we are keeping receipts. And anything you do on social media, be it this year or last year or at any time, can be used against you in the court of law that is public opinion. And so it's most recently Kevin Hart and the Oscars fiasco, or if it's James Gunn, the director and filmmaker. If you say things untoward, if you apologize or half apologize, if the cast members that you're going to be doing your work with, if they don't care, if they've forgiven you, it doesn't matter. I saw this in sports where in the matter of 2.5 weeks, four different, not athletes, not baseball players, four different pitchers had issues with past tweets coming back to haunt them in their time of fame. So I almost felt in a weird way, social media was almost like a big game of House of Cards where people were waiting to unearth something at your highest moment just to leverage it against you. It's a trend that I saw, and it's really one that I didn't really understand how that was still a thing in 2018. You, I would assume, had a manager or agent or a friend who would say, you're kind of a big deal at this point. You might want to scrub your Twitter account. But screen grabs are a terrible thing. And yeah, now there are companies who will do that work for you for a nominal fee. So that's the trend that I thought was fascinating in 2018, and I'm interested to see where it goes moving forward.
What is the first good news story that comes to mind when you think of this year?
Okay, I'm going to take it to entertainment as well, and I'm selfishly going to implicate myself in the story and someone I was lucky to interview, and that's Michael B. Jordan, and he himself is not a good news story, but I think what his ascension represents, you know, not long ago, and I'm actually doing this conversation in Oakland, and not long ago, he starred in Fruitvale Station, a small movie, him and Ryan Coogler, did well, was critically acclaimed. He used that success to move up and do a movie like Creed. They used that success to move up and do a movie named Black Panther. You may have heard of it. Kind of was a big deal. And they used that success to do Creed 2. So these are two guys who are young, you know, starting out their careers, minorities, and they got buy-in from big media companies. And every step of the way, not only did they get that opportunity, when they got it, they were ready. They were ready to take advantage of it. And thus, they got more opportunities. But I think more importantly, thus they opened the doors for others. So Black Panther was such a big movie that Ryan Coogler couldn't actually do Creed 2. So he was able to give it to Capel Jr., another person who was ready, another person who was a minority, another person who probably 10 or 15 years ago doesn't get in that room, isn't a part of that conversation. And now Michael B. Jordan has his own film company, and he's starting to greenlight things. He was an executive producer on Creed. He wasn't just an actor. So the fact that they got trust from a box office with a beloved story, the Balboa tale, I thought is interesting, but also what they were able to do with it. And LeBron James, very much in the same way, used his ability on the basketball court to become a mogul, to become a businessman, but also put his friends in power to run his business, run his movie ventures, run his agency. The fact that, in my estimation, minorities, people of color, women, we look at Issa Rae, who's done the same thing. The fact that movies like Crazy Rich Asians is being made, that to me is a really good sign. And we saw so much of it in 2018. We saw so much women of color featured on magazines. I thought it was good, not just because people were getting opportunities, because that's happened for a while, that they were able to dictate what those opportunities were going to be and to help other people come through the doors. It was not a year where Oscar so white was necessarily the conversation in terms of entertainment. And for me, the conversation was, man, look what a lot of young, interesting people with diverse backgrounds, diverse experiences were able to do, and then what that led into. I think that was the positive story that gives me, I suppose, hope for the future. To me, the experience was, and I don't know if you remember the YouTube clip of these young kids, this young class of kids, and the vast majority of them were minorities, being told that they were going to a screening of Black Panther and seeing them get up and dance, and just the thought that they were going to see a superhero that looked like them, that they didn't have to imagine themselves as Clark Kent. They could imagine someone from Africa that looked like them, that may have similar experiences, being a superhero, having superpowers. The fact that it wasn't a reach, I thought was awesome. And even, you know, in the storytelling, you know, looking at Africa, this country with so many natural resources, and often when we see it in North America, we see it, you know, from a make-a-wish standpoint. We see it on telethons where people are donating money for causes like AIDS and malaria, and not that those things are not important, but that's not the entire continent. There's lots of industry, there's lots of technology, there's lots of thriving business. And so for this film to show Africa in a futuristic way, I thought was really important.
Give me very quickly one thing you did this year to handle the overwhelming onslaught of news.
It's so, and I feel embarrassed saying, like, this is, give myself a pat on the back, like, oh, I did this important thing. But one thing I did was, if I'm watching a show with my wife and there's a downtime in the evening, I made a point that I was going to put my phone away and not watch that show with the rest of Twitter, watch it with my wife and have that commentary with my wife. And there is a aspect of FOMO, a fear of missing out with our favorite shows or our favorite sporting events. And in Twitter, it's part of the strength of it is it's a real-time conversation on everything that's going on. But when I took a step back, I was like, who's the most important to have this conversation with? With my Instagram feed or my Twitter feed or my loved ones? So that's one small thing that I do periodically. I don't do it all the time, but I try to. The other thing is I'm frequently using an app called Nuzzle. I'm not sure if you've heard of it. And basically what it does is it aggregates all of your following on Twitter, and it just streams out the articles that people you follow are retweeting. And the most popular articles that are being retweeted at any given time. You could set the setting for 24 hours or a week or whatnot. So what I lose is all of the fighting on Twitter, the gotcha Twitter, the mean Twitter, and I get the information, which is what I went to Twitter for in the first place. I kind of use Twitter like a modern-day newspaper. And so I love Nuzzle because I don't have to scroll through the divisiveness and all of the comments about said article. I can just get that article, see who I trust that's retweeted it, and read it for myself and read it through my own lens, my own eyes, my own perspective, without it being colored or tainted by anyone else. And then if I want more, if I want some more reaction to it, then I can go to Twitter for that afterwards. So Nuzzle, I think, would be the other thing where, yeah, I'm finding out why I went to Twitter in the first place. It's because there's so much good journalism that I wouldn't come across otherwise, and I want smart people to curate for me. But I don't need all of the fighting, because really no one wins in those conversations. You're never going to turn someone to your side on Twitter with how divisive it's become.
No, that's what the podcast is for.
Exactly. Exactly.
Thanks, Donovan.
Anytime.
Aaron Hutchins from Maclean's, Stacey Lee Kong from Flare.com, and Donovan Bennett, Sportsnet.ca. You will hear them all again in 2019. We can't wait. But it's not the end of 2018 until I make Claire answer a couple of questions. Claire Brassard, our producer.
Hi.
Claire, what was the most important story of 2018? You had to listen to every one of these things that we did, so you know.
Yeah, we've done a lot in 2018, so I don't know what the most important story would be, but certainly a theme that I saw a lot this year, and it was especially brought up by Stephen Marsh, who was on our podcast back in October to talk about the very real possibility of a civil war in the States and how it would affect Canada. It was a really uplifting episode, if you remember it.
We did a lot of those uplifting episodes.
Yeah. And one thing he talked about was the left and the right and how there's not really a middle ground anymore and how we've kind of lost the ability to coexist. I think that was a really strong theme in 2018. And I think it will also be a theme in 2019. And I think it's something that we really need to start to look at and try to figure out, because we can't just keep yelling at each other.
Do you have a good news story, Claire? I know we did a couple of good news stories. Something warmed your heart this year.
Yeah. It's hard to do, but it happened. It's not so much a story again. In November, to mark the 100th anniversary of the end of World War I, Maclean's did something amazing. On each of their covers, they featured a soldier who died in World War I. So every single copy was different. And we heard from people around the country who talked about just how amazing this was, how they would get a copy and, you know, they would look up the name on their copy and get really into researching this person. So I think that was a great way to start a conversation and remember these people. And what about you? What was your good story of 2018?
This one is actually really easy. We talked about happiness in one of our episodes.
Oh, yeah.
And that was great. It's always fun to talk happiness, but it was actually the story about the wallets that our guest told, which is part of the tests that they ask people to determine their level of happiness and trust in a city is the likelihood that you think a complete stranger would return your wallet to you. And people generally say like 40% chance that a person you don't know would find your wallet and make the effort to get it back to you. And then he told me about a Toronto Star project that tried that and dropped 20 wallets and 80% of them were returned. And he said, and I remember it all the time when I'm walking home, is that when you're looking around and you're having a bad day, just look at the people around you and smile at them, because 8 out of every 10 of those people would stop what they're doing in their day and bring your wallet back to you if they found it. And that's the kind of thing that when I read tweets from Donald Trump or reports from elections or global warming catastrophes, that makes me feel a little bit better. It's the little things. Yeah, it's not a lie.
That was a really nice story. And I think we're really skeptical of each other, but really, like, most of us deep down are nice people.
I hope so. See, this is part of why, and we're going to stop and let you go, but this is part of why we focus on the positive every once in a while in this podcast. Because when we set out to do a daily news podcast, we knew it was going to be depressing, and we knew the only way for us to feel okay and also to keep you listening was to tell stories like that every once in a while too. That was The Big Story, brought to you by Scotia iTrade. You can visit scotiaitrade.com to start direct investing today. Thank you for listening. On behalf of myself and Claire Brassard, who is our lead producer.
Hi.
And Stephanie Phillips, who's an assistant producer, and Ryan Clark, who is also an assistant producer, and Megan Coley, who will no doubt be saying happy holidays to you on social media. We wanted to wish you all the best for the rest of 2018. We will still be around. We'll drop a few episodes for you. We have some special surprises planned. You won't know until they show up, so keep checking your feed. Thank you for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk soon.